from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about Art with a Heart's new kindergarten program.
I'll get a preview of the Children's Choir's holiday concerts coming up this weekend.
And I'll find out about Kurt Churchman's new gallery location, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Glick Foundation recently awarded a significant matching grant to Art with a Heart. The grant is aimed at expanding this visual arts education not-for-profit's reach into 7 new classrooms beginning in January. Sharon Gamble invited Art with a Heart's executive director, Andrew Lee, and intern, Bridget Woodson, to tell us about Art with a Heart and this program's expansion.
Remind us, I'm looking at you, Andrew, how Art with a Heart got started, what the idea was.
Sure. Art with a Heart started in 2002. It was the brainchild of a lady called Carol Conrad. And Carol was an artist and teaching artist of many years who wanted to bring the quality of visual art education that comes from having somebody with the experience and the right materials and all the right pieces of that environment to kids in the city who would not otherwise receive it.
Because it's not offered in their schools?
You know, in many cases, our schools are providing art education. There are teachers there. Sometimes that can be stymied by the available resources.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but sometimes.
Sure.
And even when we've got wonderful art education in a school during a school day, there's plenty of evidence to tell us that the more engaged students later in life are showing some much more positive outcomes as it relates to their career and their lives.
Sure. And teachers of all subjects are stretched really thin, no matter what school system we're talking about. So anything
yes,
we can do to augment that and enrich that is pretty important. I'm going to, Bridget, because your exposure to Art with a Heart is pretty new and pretty recent, what attracted you to your internship with this organization?
Well, it's kind of funny because it was actually completely an accident.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had emailed Butler's internship and career offices. I was actually looking for like an on-campus job. And then she saw that I was in arts and men and said, hey, like, I might have something that you might really enjoy, you know. And then she introduced me via email to Andrew. And then so it kind of got started that way. And then within the first week that I was there, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. Like, I love doing this and have been there since last August. So
wow. And what do you find, obviously you find it gratifying and fulfilling. What about it makes you feel that way?
Well, it's technically the first job that I had that wasn't, you know, like a part-time something that was actually mattered, like something that I was doing that was actually reaching people, and it was actually reaching people, you know, in a way that was something that I cared about and something that they cared about too. And then being able to be the communication outlet for that and then learning as I went was really, really awesome.
Cool. So you have an astonishingly wide range of programs. You have summer camps, you have after-school programs, and you're doing this with not a big staff.
That is correct, yes.
He's smiling as I'm asking this question.
I'm no different than most nonprofit executives in that regard. But, yeah, we when Carol started in 2002, we started with 100 kids in a couple of summer camps. This year, we expect to see over 4,000 kids And a couple thousand of those will be through the workshops we do with the Indianapolis Library, which is a wonderful partnership for us. Yeah, so it's a good opportunity to get our name out, and it's a good opportunity to have kids who are maybe non-traditional students or for whatever reason out of school be able to access art experiences.
How do you find your kids, or how do the kids and families find you?
Most of the rest of our programming we usually do in more of a business-to-business type relationship. So our clients are schools, neighborhood centers, camp organizers, really any youth-serving organization that has an interest in an educationally-based art enrichment program.
And, you know, though your focus is visual art is a really big term, right?
Yes, it is. We do our best to maintain a focus on a fine art curriculum. So,
can you define that?
Of course. If we're looking at summer or after school programming, that would typically mean we're trying to cover painting, drawing, 3D, mixed media every time we develop a curriculum for one of those programs. If it's a workshop program, we're typically responding to the client's needs, but always with the idea that we're trying to build the educational piece in there somewhere.
Responding to the client's needs, can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, in the case, you know, the library is a good example. They know their audience well, and they like to do things that obviously is appealing to their audience, but also will bring in new audiences to their branches too. So we find ourselves doing fun things like drawing superheroes or zombies or making bracelets or I think what I'm, you know, most recently we have been doing guitar pick art with over summer.
What is that?
Well, we now possess a very large number of guitar stamps, and you can take just about any material and stamp a guitar pick out of it and then use it in any number of ways to make art. So you could imagine how you could layer those. You can use them as a
scales or
almost.
Feathers, or
scales, feathers, exactly that sort of thing. You can play with pattern. You can play with color, repetition. Even in something that's like that, it's relatively simple. You can go back to the principles and elements of art and show kids how you're applying those.
Are there community partner types of community partners you'd like to have that you don't have yet?
A lot of the partnerships we've been building lately really have been around our Creative Kindergarten Connections program.
Right. Let's talk about that, because that's kind of a new star in your firmament.
It is. We've been doing programming in kindergarten classrooms since 2007, since funding for all-day kindergarten arrived in Indiana. But this is new, and for the last 2 years we've been doing a program with a much stronger research base and a much stronger educational element to it. In addition, we created this thing during the recession, and one of the things I wanted to do was have a business model that would make sense to schools. There's a lot of pay-per-visit programming. Not that that's wrong, but I think we all know that schools struggle with that. And so we've tried to take the capacity-building approach here and help the teachers understand how art can be used as a vehicle for learning in these early childhood grades because it's age-appropriate and it's developmentally appropriate.
And it's laying the groundwork for all kinds of math, for literacy, for science, for history.
It is. So what we do actually is a three-center rotation, and the first center is actually an art activity based out of a book or based on a recognizable piece of art. And the other two centers are a literacy and a math-based art activity. And so that helps the schools have a degree of comfort in bringing that into the school day, because that can be a really difficult thing for arts organizations to do, is to build that bridge to the school and have them understand why this is an important thing to do when there's a lot of focus on What are we doing in our literacy periods? What are we doing in our math periods?
So it makes the schools more likely to take the risk of, quote-unquote, taking time away from straight arithmetic skill building.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bridget, do you get much chance to see the kids, to see this in action? Do you have a kind of a favorite moment that you've watched a kid do something or a group of kids do something?
Yeah, I went into some of the kindergarten programs at Key last semester, and I sat in and just watched the rotations and was kind of like taking a volunteer role, but also I was taking pictures and I was taking videos of the kids. And I had one who actually drew a picture of me.
Aw.
And because they were, I told him my name was Bridget and they were on the letter B. And so he actually like made the B into a person.
Aww.
And said that it was me. And I thought it was adorable
because
I had just met him, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so I thought that was really
cute. I will tell you, there is no better therapy than going into a kindergarten classroom for 90 minutes a day. It's wonderful.
Changes your perspective on everything, doesn't it?
Room full of people that want to hug you and talk to you.
Yeah.
Careful, there'll be a stampede.
We would love that. We're, you know, this program has been growing from its original 10 classrooms the first year we did it. We will be in 29 as of January. And part of that capacity building and economic piece that I talked about is the use of volunteers in two out of the three stations with the classroom teacher operating the third. So, we'd love a stampede, actually. That would be marvelous.
And what kind of, for the leaders, for the instructors, what kind of background do you need people who are degreed in education, who are degreed in art, or do you have some training you can provide to somebody who might be a little bit more of a layman?
We love to get anybody. If someone has an interest in coming and assisting in providing a positive interaction in the classroom, then we'll work with them. This is an opportunity that we find appeals to retired teachers, artists. So, yes, we see a good proportion of those. But we have parents come in. We just have random people who get excited about the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we do provide training, two of those a year, one up front to enable them to become familiar with the program content and how the center, rotating center model works, and then another one a little later on so that they can develop their classroom management skills, which isn't as perhaps as scary as it sounds. A center is about 8 kids at a time, but if you're not used to that, it's sometimes good to have some pointers.
Sure, absolutely. What do you have the resources to track your former students to kind of keep up with them a little bit later in school, and what have you found?
Actually, in this program, we do. And that's a first for us, so we're very excited. We've not had time yet to start looking too far down the road.
Sure.
We want to be realistic about how much exposure do you need to a program like this before you can reasonably expect to see academic success.
Right.
And I don't think anybody expects us to see suddenly dramatic changes in Dibble scores because we're doing 90 minutes a week. And actually, we've seen some very good, measurable, positive results this year. And in looking at the results of our evaluation, that was what helped us decide we really do need to be doing this across the whole early childhood grade range. So the plan now is over the next 5 years, we roll out, first of all, pre-K, and then we jump forward to do first through third. And so I do feel like as we move through the next 5 years, we're going to see increasing benefit. We look for a couple of things in this program from the kids. One is improvements in creativity. And by improvements, I mean a broader range of creative behaviors and also more frequent occurrence of those.
Hmm.
And then the other thing we look at is something, well, the other instrument that we use is something called the Child Behavior Rating Scale. And what's great about this is the body of evidence behind it that indicates this is a really good bellwether for how a child will do reading at grade level at third grade. And that's a hugely important objective for us right now. It's a key part of United Way's strategy. And so what we've seen in the first year is the development of a lot of what we call self-governing behaviors. Children are able to recover from an interruption and go back to their work. They're bringing their best efforts. They're staying focused. They are basically carrying themselves in a manner that's conducive with learning. And that's a good, positive, encouraging starting point.
Sharon Gamble with Art with a Heart's Executive Director Andrew Lee and intern Bridget Woodson. Art with a Heart needs donations of cash, but would also like you to consider volunteering. You can learn lots more at artwithaheart.us. Again, artwithaheart.us.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Indianapolis Children's Choir will be performing a lot this weekend with four concerts you can hear at St. Luke's. Travis DiNicola spoke with Henry Leck, the current artistic director of the choir, and with Josh Petty, his successor, come April.
Henry, Josh, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. And Josh, may I just say congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Your new job. I know you don't take over entirely until the spring, right?
Yes, that's correct. After April 30th, that's right.
But big congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And I was teasing you a little bit before we went on the air, but you have some pretty big shoes to fill here.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
Henry.
His feet are bigger than mine.
Good to know. Henry, you've just done such a tremendous job in the work that you've done as the founder and artistic director of the Children's Choir. Before we talk about the holiday show, tell me just a little bit about the organization.
I should correct you that I haven't done that. Our team has done that.
Well,
and, you know, Josh is taking over for me, but truth is that Josh and I have worked together for 15 years.
That's awesome.
So he's not new to the organization nor to the kids. And Ruth Dwyer has been with us for nearly 30 years. So it's been a team effort, and I think we've done a good job at that. We're proud of the achievements of our kids and their accomplishments while they're with us and even after they've left. So it's been a nice ride.
It really has. And your kids are just incredible. And it's great to see them featured in so many different events. I mean, not just the concerts that you do, but tied to other concerts and sporting events and things throughout the community. I mean, it's, and of course, the ubiquitous bumper stickers and that are out there.
Everywhere.
They are everywhere.
Well, it's been part of our philosophy from the beginning is that the children's choir should be more than a choir. It should be part of the community. And with that philosophy, we have sung and been present at all the major happenings, for the most part, in the city, both politically and culturally. So it gives the kids a great experience to find out what's going behind the scenes, but it also gives them a wide growth experience.
Well, congratulations on that, too. And let me ask you just a couple basic questions here. There are more than just one choir that make up the children's choir. Can you give me sort of a brief rundown? Because I know there's a number of different ones.
Yeah, there are about 20 choirs. But
we don't have to talk about all 20.
We'll go one at a time. No. No, the truth is that while we say we're the Indianapolis Children's Choir, it's a very broad music education program.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Josh would like to speak a little to that because he manages all the regional choirs plus the preparatory program and the First Steps program.
Yeah. Josh, please.
So the beginning part, the base of the pyramid, as we kind of call it, starts with our First Steps program. And First Steps is our early childhood, so preschoolers through kindergarten. So we have music classes for them. And then we go into what we call our prep program, which really prepares kids for singing in a choir. But it's not so much of that long hour, 15-minute rehearsal. But it's got mm-hmm. music games and movement and dancing along with all that choral experience. So that's for first, second, and third graders. And then we have our regional program. So that includes things like the Hendricks County Children's Choir, the Carmel Children's Choir, Fisher's Children's Choir. And so those are primarily fourth through sixth grade. And with those, we're trying to give the people in the outlying area, outlying communities, a way to be part of the children's choir without needing to drive so far to, to get to campus. And at all of those locations, we also have that preparatory group and those first step groups. So the parents can come try us out and see what being in the children's choir is all about and start to get that great educational foundation of being
And when
in the
you
choir.
Say get to campus, that's the Butler campus, which
that's
is your
correct.
Your
it
primary
is.
Home.
Exactly.
And which has been a great partner, I know, for many years.
Absolutely.
It truly has. We were there rent-free for a long, long time. And we assisted in the building and expansion of Lilly Hall. And so our offices are there, and we have rehearsal space there. The halls are clogged with children every day.
But what a cool thing, too, for kids to be able to have that opportunity to be on a college campus as
yes.
well. How many children are a part of the program each year on average?
We serve over 3,000 children every week.
Wow.
So it's a lot. And when you include the first step classes, which are all over the city in many different venues, and the preparatory program and the regional choirs and the choirs on campus. And then we also have a high school division. We have over 100 kids in a mixed choir and 50 kids in a women's ensemble, a women's high school choir. So we reach a lot of kids.
Henry, do you have a sense of how many kids have walked through your door in your tenure?
No.
That's a lot.
Well, I think at the 20th anniversary, we tried to calculate it was over 10,000 kids then, but I think we've lost track.
Well, it's an amazing number. Now, Josh, were you one of those kids?
No.
Okay.
I was not one of those kids. I met Henry. He was my professor at Butler, and that's how I met him and studied conducting with him. However, the funny story is I did marry a former singer.
Okay.
So we met working.
So you're in the family.
I am in the family. We met working at the children's choir. Only through marriage, but yes, I married one, so.
Very good. Well, you've got a lot of great concerts that are coming up. The first one is The Angels Sing, which is taking place at St. Luke's United Methodist Church on Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th. Tell me a bit about this concert.
Well, we have a whole weekend of concerts.
Yes, you do.
That time, and I'll tell you, there's no experience like it. There'll be 300-400 kids singing at Angels Sing, and brass and strings and percussion and organ and piano. It's a sight to behold and glorious sounds. But on that same weekend at 12:30 on Saturday, we have Celebrate the Season, which is for our younger singers. But there's also a cameo of the advanced choirs. And then at 3 o'clock, we have another concert called Sounds of the Season, and that's for our intermediate singers with a cameo of the advanced ones. So we keep
lots of doors
swinging at St. Luke's on that weekend.
And so these are all at St. Luke's, right?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. So so concerts Friday at 7 p.m. as well as Saturday at 7, and then the other two concerts, 12:30 and 3 o'clock on that Saturday. So what sort of music will be featured?
Well, the one piece that people always request is O Holy Night, and I'm thrilled to say that we have an internationally known tenor. His name is Brendan Gannell, who is coming from Italy. He's an alumnus, I should say, and he has an incredible voice, is doing great work, and he's coming to sing, so we're doing that and a whole range of different new arrangements of carols people know, like Silent Night and O Come All Ye Faithful, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And a few strange pieces like Tundra.
I don't know that one.
it's quite a variety, but people will hear music that put them in the spirit of the season.
Of course, of course. How long have the kids been working on these concerts?
Well, our last big concert, were the last weekend in October. So on November 1st, we were doing Pulang Gloria at the cathedral. So,
it's been
hustling
Christmas
around
for a long time.
Since then.
Yeah.
So, Josh, you're looking forward to this, I imagine. What are some of your favorite pieces that the kids are going to be doing?
The ones Henry's conducting.
Oh.
How's that? No. There's a great arrangement that Dan Forrest, a wonderful composer, did of O Come All Ye Faithful. Mm-hmm. And I think people are going to be blown away by it. But we're also doing John Williams' Somewhere in My Memory from Home Alone. You know, as Henry said, there's some great stuff, some
favorites. What
about favorites.
This White Winter Hymn?
Oh, if anybody likes pentatonics,
okay.
We're doing the White Winter Hymnal. And if you look it up on YouTube, it's got all this body percussion with it. And so
oh, wow.
If you want to see 180 kids doing body percussion, come check it out.
They must love rehearsing that.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They do. They really do.
Every time
they cheer.
Mentions it.
Yeah. So we've got some great stuff planned. I'm really excited.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So four great concerts. And of course, I mean, you know, parents and families and friends will be there. But these concerts are awesome for anybody who wants to go.
They truly are. Yeah. You know, there's this kind of misconception about children's choir, but you will hear professional singing probably as well in tune and as beautiful as anything you could hear.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Now, for kids who are going to these concerts and they're like, wow, I want to be on stage, how soon can they get involved in the choir?
Second semester. We have all kinds of opportunities for kids at various levels, and all they have to do is want to sing. They just call our number. We set up an interview with them and place them.
So you start right after the new year? Sounds
you
like
bet.
A great resolution,
yeah,
perhaps, as well. Yeah. Okay, so tell me just a little bit about how this transition is going to work with you guys. Henry, Josh?
Well,
this is
our 30th
obviously
anniversary.
Obviously, you've been planning this for a long time, which
yeah,
is,
we have.
It's
this
an important
is probably
thing.
The best plan of succession that you'll ever have. We've been doing this for a long, long time. But on the 30th of April at Clues Hall, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. It's going to be a concert full of premieres. Every piece on the program will be brand new music that have been contributed by composer friends of ours throughout the United States. And it's at that concert that there'll be literally a passing of the baton and Josh will become the artistic director.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
It must be. Yeah. A little scary, I would imagine, too, but definitely exciting.
Yeah, there are times, you know, where the stomach just keeps creeping up. Is this real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you're just going to ride off into the sunset? Or?
Into the sunset. No, actually, I work to the end of the season, and then my title will be conductor laureate. And
we'll see you around a bit, I'm
sure.
Yeah,
I'll be around, and I do a lot of professional bookings and still continuing to write and to compose and edit and that sort of thing, so...
Excellent.
We're not going to let him totally ride off.
No, I couldn't imagine that. Well, thank you both. I really appreciate you coming in. Henry, it's always great to see you. Josh,
my
it's great to meet you.
Thank you.
And thank you both. And happiest of holidays to both of you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Travis DiNicola with Henry Leck and Josh Petty from the Indianapolis Children's Choir. Their concert, Angels Sing, takes place at St. Luke's United Methodist Church Friday and Saturday, December 18th and 19th at 7 p.m. Additional concerts also take place at St. Luke's on Saturday at 12:30 and 3 p.m. You can get more information at iccchoir.org. That's the letters I-C and the word choir.org. Travis?
Yes, Sharon.
There are no spoilers. There are no Star Wars spoilers on this edition of our calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
I am your mother.
Luke, I am your calendar. That doesn't really work. I don't know. I'll work on my Wookiee later. Anyway, where is Matt Soucy when you need him? Speaking of Wookiees. Oh, Sharon, what do you have?
No, we have not opened the eggnog
yet.
We really haven't. We're just naturally effervescent. Hey, a reminder that this Saturday night at 7 at the Garfield Park Arts Center, Eric Grayson and Glory June Greif are going to do a presentation on the Century of Progress World's Fair, which happened in 1933 in Chicago. Why should you care? Because chances are very good that some relative of yours attended because it happened in the throes of the Depression and it was a great, great distraction for a good many people. And about every third person you've met, their grandparent or great-grandparent went to that World's Fair. It's also the World's Fair that made Sally Rand famous. And if you don't know about Sally Rand and her fan dance, you might consider going down to the Garfield Park Arts Center this Saturday night at 7 for this presentation.
Very cool. You know, and while you're down, you might want to go a little bit earlier to Garfield Park because Conservatory Crossing, which is their train exhibit and all the great poinsettias and everything else is going on now through December 31st and Mondays through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sundays 1 to 5. I'd love going down there to see the trains. Mm-hmm. It's just fun being in the warm conservatory.
Yeah.
Even when it's warm outside.
Even when it's warm outside.
Especially when it's cold outside.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, speaking of trains, while you're on the terrain chasing track.
Oh,
nice. I'm so sorry.
I'm following your train of thought.
I see that.
You know what? Someone's going to say, this is not the calendar you are looking for. Okay.
Don't forget Jingle Rails over at the Idlejerg, which is just, even if you're not into trains, and I don't know why you wouldn't be into trains. If you're not into trains, you need to call Travis and he will convince you otherwise.
Sure.
But the settings for this train display at the Idlejerg are made of all natural materials, bark and twigs and leaves and petals from flowers, and they're just spectacular representations of some of our great natural resources, great parks and natural installations around the country. It is so cool. And that's Jingle Rails at the Idlejorg.
Do you know that the Idlejorg is one of only two places in the country where the team that builds those gorgeous settings sets up their exhibits every Christmas? The other one's at the New York Botanical Gardens.
We are in great company, aren't
we?
Yeah. And that's been going on, I believe this is the seventh or eighth year.
I think so,
that.
Yeah. And it's such a cool yeah. exhibit. Something to plan for in the new year, which sounds like just a lovely way to spend a Sunday, is the American Pianists Association is presenting classical pianist Frederick Chu in a brunch concert at the Columbia Club on Monument Circle. And it starts with mimosas in the Grand Lobby, and then brunch in the Crystal Terrace, and then the concert upstairs with this 1985 classical fellow. What a great idea. I think it'd be a perfect Christmas gift for people in your life who love some great piano. Tickets are $75, and that includes the brunch and everything else. You can get more information at AmericanPianist.org, and that is on January 31st. That takes place.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Great motivation to get out of the house during a great time of year. You hear some lovely music. Hey, I got a chance to hear Everett Green doing his magnificent cover of What Are You Doing New Year's Eve at Buscelli Wallerub Jazz Orchestra's concert a few days ago at the Jazz Kitchen. So if you're thinking, ooh, what are we doing New Year's Eve, and you have somebody in your life who's expecting you to make some plans, here's a suggestion. At the Palladium, there's a New Year's Eve event that features bands, karaoke, cocktails, hors d'oeuvres. One of the bands is the Hot Sardines Jazz Band, so you know there's
Hot Sardines.
I know, there's a chance to dance. Gourmet desserts and coffee, too, so you can find out more about that Palladium's website.
Very cool.
Yep,
Center
Presents.
New Year's Eve. Hey, if you're looking for a really cool Christmas gift for your favorite Hoosier, you might want to consider Indiana's 200, The People Who Shaped the Hoosier State. It's a book that was just published by the Indiana Historical Society and is available at the History Center. And it looks at 200 people who shaped Indiana over the past 200 years. And so there's biographies and profiles of all sorts of people, from Hoagy Carmichael and James Whitcomb Riley to Theodore Dreiser and T.C. Steele and, oh my goodness, so many others. Sarah Bolton and Michael Jackson and St. Theodora and, oh, many, many more. Sounds like a lot of fun. Great holiday book and a great gift for Hoosiers in your life.
Bicentennial alert.
Yes.
Bicentennial alert.
I have a feeling we'll be talking a lot about the Bicentennial in 2006.
I am absolutely certain you're right. Hey, the Phoenix Theater has had so many people slamming their phone lines and their website for tickets for A Very Phoenix Xmas 10, O Come Let Us Adore Us, that they've added performances, but don't delay. Get on their website or give them a call, phoenixtheater.org. Or 317-639-PLAY to see if you can score one of those tickets or more than one of those tickets for the added performances.
You know, I'm throwing out some things that are happening very early in January because mm-hmm. it's easy over the holidays to sort of forget this stuff. But Dance Kaleidoscope always does a concert in early January. And this year they're doing Classic Greats, A Perfect Meal of Dance from January 7th to the 10th. So put that on your calendar now. Maybe get tickets for the holidays. And this classic meal includes a menu with an appetizer from Mexico with music set to from Aaron Copland. And then an entree of the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy with Tchaikovsky. And then a dessert with Frank Sinatra, which
wow.
sounds like a whole bunch of fun, with Dance Kaleidoscope January 7th through the 10th.
It does indeed. Now, if you're thinking, wow, my December calendar is completely full, I really wanted to go see that tiny show, that art show at Gallery 924.
Such a great show.
Don't worry, you have until January 8th to see all of those lovely small artworks at Gallery 924 at 924 North Pennsylvania Street, also the Arts Council's offices at that site.
really great show. Mm-hmm. That's a great work there. Very tiny work. That's the whole point. Small work. Hey, you can still check out...
Not created by elves.
No.
Even though Travis just sounded like one.
But it'll fit in a stocking.
Yep.
A Beef and Boards Christmas is going on through the 23rd. You can go check out this classic fun dinner theater with a great Christmas review.
I have a last-minute holiday gift for your public radio-loving friends. Or I'm not going to tell if you buy this for yourself. If you like Ira Glass and This American Life, don't forget he's coming to the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel on January 23rd with a show called Reinventing the Radio, An Evening with Ira Glass. If you're a regular listener, you've heard his promos on this station. Essentially, you get to see radio being made on stage, so you get to... be a part of the process. As you are probably well aware, there's lots more recorded than ends up in any given hour of radio, and Ira's going to take you behind the scenes and walk you through all that with his trademark wit and fun approach to life and storytelling. So that's coming up January 23rd. I'm sure the Palladium would be happy to set you up with tickets as a stocking stuffer or a present for somebody you like or for yourself.
There you go. Hey, and while you're up there, you might also want to check out Actress Theater of Indiana's Frog and Toad, which goes through December 27th. And Sharon, you know what? You can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us on that calendar that we call
What'll We Do? Spoiler-free. Don't tell us about Star Wars.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Fine Estate Art and Rugs is back in Indianapolis. After a year in the Carmel Arts and Design District, Kurt Churchman has moved his Fine Art and Rug Gallery to the growing Midtown District at 1332 North Illinois Street. He came to our studios to tell Sharon Gamble about the new location and Home for the Holidays, the newest exhibition.
Just in time for the holidays, you're settling into your new space.
Yeah, settled in, largely.
Yeah. And you've got how many square feet?
We're about at 3,700 square feet.
Okay.
So it's a good amount of square feet. We could stand a little more, but that works just fine.
Sure. And you're in a district that is, you're kind of a pioneer in a district that's growing. Illinois, kind of Midtown Illinois, is like one of the last frontiers of retail and entertainment and arts, and a bunch of things are getting ready to happen there.
Yeah, we've got construction on an old porcelain front building just to the north of us that I think is going to be mixed-use senior apartments or something, and so it's not going to be luxury, but it'll be much nicer than the derelict building it had been.
Sure.
And, yeah, quite a bit going on up and down Illinois. Now, we're in a funny stretch, so we're at 1332 Illinois, and if you're driving up Illinois, what you see on the east side of the street is the Channel 6 back lot. And so that I don't think will ever change and make that block real hip. But happy to be where we're at, and parking super easy. And yeah, Illinois is happening.
Yeah.
And then we're like, you know, we're 5 or 6 blocks from Landmarks, but you got to cross all that way east.
Yeah, but people are smart. They can figure out our one-way streets, I hope.
Yeah, well, or on foot, even on foot.
Yeah,
I mean,
I could
walk to the FYI studios.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And so you're going to participate in First Fridays.
Yeah, definitely doing the IDOTA First Fridays. Yeah. We did the first one last December and had 60 people through on our first Friday.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, we had a good crowd. And looking forward to definitely being in that mesh.
Yeah. Hey, I want to talk about you do these beautiful newsletters to tempt us to come in and shop, which I appreciate. And I, by way of kind of reminding people what your territory is, I'd like to talk about the artworks and the rug. In your most recent newsletter, you have one of your paintings of the moment is called Storm Clouds. It was actually painted in Camden, Maine, but by an Indiana guy. Let's talk about Will Vauder a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Will Vauder, by way of quick biography, was born Hoosier, you know, native son, born in Greenfield. Thanks. I keep thinking it's Greensburg, and it's Greenfield, Indiana. And there, or moved to Greenfield when he was young. And there he met James Whitcomb Riley, another, you know, famous native son. And and wound up illustrating for Riley. He was more or less self-taught, but illustrated for Riley through 11 different books of verse.
Wow.
And extensive illustrations in those books. And those become commercially available occasionally. We've had one or two.
So those were pen and ink, like line drawings?
Yeah, those were typically gouaches, which is like watercolor. But they mm-hmm. because they were for publication back in the day, they were black and white. So he was painting in with whites and shades of gray and blacks, but not a lot of heavy black. So it was typically, it was like a monochromatic painting.
Mm-hmm. Sure, so that it would reproduce well.
So it would reproduce.
And get those beautiful details.
Yeah, without the colors kind of not doing what one might expect in a black and white reproduction.
So he was younger than Riley.
Yeah, would have been younger. I don't know Riley's dates, but would have been younger. And then eventually married a gal and moved to Brown County, as I was researching Riley last week. And allegedly, she didn't like Vauders drinking, and Brown County was dry.
Oh.
So she wanted to move him to some place where he could still paint, but that didn't have the access to alcohol that he had enjoyed.
So we probably should thank her because his output was probably greater.
His output was strong, but she turned out to be cantankerous. Her name was Mary Vauder and turned out to be somewhat cantankerous. I know, right?
So he painted to get away from her.
Yeah, maybe, right. He had a down. He had 57 acres
Honey,
in a downtown studio.
I have to go into the studio.
Right, I'm busy in the studio. So apparently she was kind of a kook and very high-minded, and anyone who crossed her, she would sue him.
Really?
Yeah, just file suit. You know, like people do.
Wow.
And so he finally got so sick of it, he threatened her. And if she didn't knock it off, he was going to divorce her, and divorced her in 1923.
Wow.
And then he stayed in Brown County and continued to paint. He became pretty famous during his lifetime. And the story on him, which I know is true, is he used to paint the back of his car. When he traveled to a painting site, he'd paint mm-hmm. the back of his car because people would always see one of those cute Brown County artists out on the street painting, and it drove him so crazy having to stop and be friendly and talk and get away from the art. He just would close himself in the car and paint.
Well, he seems – I would like to get in the Wayback Machine and go have dinner with him. He seems very creative.
Yeah.
And not just as an artist. So tell us about this particular painting that you're kind of featuring right now.
Yeah, the featuring has sold, actually. So, yeah.
But, well, don't get too attached to the idea, listeners.
Don't come and see it. Well, it's interesting when the Indiana artist will leave the domain, and he was known to travel to Maine some, for sure. But it looks like he was painting very freely, which is kind of nice. The Brown County stuff was traditional landscapes, luminous kind of in nature. And mm-hmm. this main piece is just so visceral. It's just really smearing wet paint among wet paint, which he didn't do that much in his Brown County output. So it's like he was on vacation, right? Just painting free.
Trying something new.
Yeah. And so it's neat when you get these. They may not be the primary focus of a collection, but if you're doing Indiana art and maybe you have a Vauder, it's a great companion piece, something like that, and shows his range.
Yeah. Place him for us. So he's later than kind of the core Brown County school.
Yeah, Steele, right. Yeah. Steele and Schultz and all those guys.
A generation later.
Yeah, or a half generation maybe. Yeah. I want to say he was born in like 1875.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the email, you probably could pinpoint it. But
yeah.
But somewhere in there. And so Steele was born in like 54. Forsyth was born around then. I might have those dates wrong, so apologies. But so, yeah, he's like a
little brother.
Yeah, half generation later something. But he was definitely one of those Brown County guys who came and stayed. He from 1908, which was very early, really, for Brown County. Steele was, I think, 06. And so for 1908 on, he was in Brown County and painting, for a living, and entered Hoosier Salon several times and was really one of the beloved Brown County artists. Yeah. We don't see enough of him in the aftermarket.
Speaking of people sort of adopted into Brown County, this is I'm taking a side trip here. Because that spectacular Gustav Bauman exhibit is up at the IMA, and you have some Bauman. So if our listeners go to that exhibit and go, I need one of those.
Yeah.
You have at least two.
We're down to one. We just sold one a couple weeks ago. And
good
we also
for you.
Had, well, thank you. We also have, occasionally we sell art as well. not just hang it and put price tags on it. And so we have Hard and Hollow from 1926, and it's up at the gallery now. And then we also have the book that he did, again, for Riley. Bauman illustrated a book called All the Year Round. And when I can find that book with compromised binding, I'll de-leave the Bauman plates from there, and there are 12 representing every month of the year. Ooh. Those are very modest. They're like $175.
Ooh.
They're not original woodblocks. They're all reproductions of his illustrations.
But still.
And there's a finite quantity, and they're very arts and craftsy and represent Bauman on the cheap.
Yeah.
And then I think Hardin's priced at $10,000 with us now, and that's kind of 8 to 10 is typical of his Indiana work. Mm-hmm. But I want to get back to the IMA thing. Yes. Great exhibit up at the IMA, and they're featuring all sorts of ephemera and marionettes in addition to a huge range of woodblocks and the studies for those. And, you know, Bauman was in Brown County from 1910 to 1917, hugely formulaic years for him. He's like the American woodblock craftsman. So absolutely worth going to see Marty Krause's Bauman exhibit
and
at the IMA.
One of the fascinating things to me about him is that he's largely self-taught in his particular craft, and he didn't teach anybody else. So there's not a next generation.
Yeah, he's very singular, and he was an emigre from Germany. I think in his early teens, and I think there was some studying going on abroad in technique. But yeah, he really stands out as both his ability to illustrate and then to execute the woodblocks. I mean, his chosen form woodblocks, and there's just nothing like him.
Yeah. So if you haven't been to see the exhibit, you've got two more voices encouraging you to do that.
Yeah, he is really an American treasure.
Yeah, fabulous. So in addition to your older artwork, you are also representing a handful of contemporary artists who are kind of in the same tradition. Tell us about Gallery 2 and how that came about.
Yeah. So we had an opportunity to expand, which ultimately we didn't wind up staying in our College Ave location where we were last year. But we had an opportunity to expand and do some representation. And there was a need. And most of the folks we represent are heavily involved in IPAPA, which is the Indiana Plein Air Painters Association. And they are, exactly like you say, they're painting in that plein air impressionist landscape tradition that we all know from T.C. Steele and then the Brown County School and what have you, the Richmond School. The major art output of Indiana over the last 125 years has been Midwestern Impressionism, and so absolutely in that school. And we've got about 10 artists we represent, and that is Gallery 2, and we display their work regularly and robustly.
Yeah. Your painting of the moment, do you still have it, or have you sold Marianne Davis's Whitewater from Levee Road?
Yeah, no, we still have the Marianne Davis piece, and it's on display. And that was a neat show because that was part of the show we opened with when we were still in Carmel a couple months ago, a month and a half ago. And it featured, it was a dual show with David Seward and Marianne, and it was called Within Earshot. And it was paintings from occasions when they happen to be on site together painting a similar scene. And so you get two perspectives, two impressionist perspectives of a beautiful Indiana setting.
Love that. Great idea. I hope they do that again.
Yeah. A great dual show idea. They came up with that.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
Tell us about why people who don't know anything about rugs should learn and maybe buy some good rugs.
Because I've got too many rugs and I need them out there in nice homes. Why? What about rugs? We stock about 1,200 handmade rugs. And really the big differentiator with rugs, because they're an art form, right? But they're this funny anonymous art form. You know, they typically aren't signed. You don't know where they came from.
And most people put them on the floor and use them.
Yeah, right? And then they get used. But the cool thing about handmaids is they'll just last forever. They can take such a beating. I have kids and we had some applesauce issues.
You have two school-aged active boys.
Boys,
I've seen
them
in your gallery running and jumping on the rugs,
yes,
on the stacks of
yes,
rugs.
Yes, yes. That's been, there's a statute now in place for that.
I see, okay.
So they just will take such a beating and can take a cleaning and then come back for more. And the antique stuff we carry is the great kind of rug thing in the United States was going on in the 20s when, as a society, we had money to afford rugs, and we were kind of getting to that point where there was a taste for things foreign and semi-exotic and for everybody, not just the Vanderbilts. And so rugs were really, you know, a lot of antique rugs were brought into this country at that time. And those things still endure. I have, you know, scores of antique 1920s, 1930s rugs in the gallery. They aren't terribly expensive, but they're still around after 85 years.
Which means you can buy them and pass them on to your kids.
They really are a lifetime.
They'll be around for some more generations.
Yeah, they're a lifetime investment. I can't say the market on handmade rugs is strong now. It seems like it's a my mom, your mom kind of thing that aspired to handmade rugs. But there are, you know, still many, many people who covet handmade rugs. And yeah, that investment will, those rugs go to the kids, especially with climate control. Yeah, they just last forever. They're amazing.
Kind of a good news, bad news for someone who sells them, isn't it?
Yeah, right. You run out of market. I encourage vacation homes for both the reasons of rug and art.
And you stock some contemporary handmade rugs.
We do a lot of custom, and we have direct relationships with Nepal. And so that's fun because the customer can – I have many templates to start with, but they can totally custom size, custom design, custom color a rug, even –
a motif?
Yeah, usually they're more modern in nature or transitional.
Okay,
but yeah, absolutely anything. I mean, short of breaking copyright law, we can do it. And then it goes off to Nepal. The order goes off to Nepal, and they produce an image of it, and we get to the point of yes, that's what we're doing. And they'll even do a little sample called a strike off and send it over to me. And
wow.
And then maybe 8 to 12 weeks later, the custom rug appears.
That's really fast.
It's really neat.
For handmade, high
yeah,
quality.
Handmade. Yeah, handmade. They often feature silk. Because they can, because they're more modern.
Mm-hmm.
Silk will play in a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get other textile choices like bamboo silk, which is a synthetic silk, or hemp, or nettle, or, of course, there's wool, which is, you know, what's used in almost all rugs. But, yeah, they're quite fun to do. It's a process. So, it's one of those dig the journey things, but they're fun.
Sharon Gamble with gallery owner Kirk Churchman. Visit Fine Estate Art and Rugs at 1332 North Illinois Street or online at fineestateart.com. Again, fineestateart.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m.
You can join us for our special edition of The Art of the Matter featuring local music and spoken word pieces created especially for the winter holidays. You won't want to miss it.
So please listen Christmas Eve and the day after Christmas to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.